Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome back to Angel on Top. Just a few announcements before we get into Blood Money.
As we mentioned last episode, Laura and I will be attending Buffy Prom held the weekend of April 18th in New York at Brooklyn's Bell House.
And as promised, we held a prom giveaway. Two lucky Angel on Top fans will win tickets to prom for themselves and their plus ones. We chose from the Instagram comments on the gorgeous photo of your four favorite hosts at 2018's Buffy Prom. And the winners are...
First winner is Sunday Ghost. A person named Wednesday will be reaching out to you. And the second winner
is Jovi Pop. Giovanni, come on down. You will each get a plus one and your names will be at will call on the event at April 18th at the Bell House. Again, we will be in touch with you both directly with more details. Thanks for being part of it and can't wait to meet you at prom.
And for anyone with questions about how COVID-19 will impact Buffy Prom, Kristen and Jenny of Buffering the Vampire Slayer are in direct conversation with the Bell House in Brooklyn and together are monitoring both CDC and NYC-based guidelines as they evolve. The first priority is keeping you all safe and healthy, and they will have more information for you by March 18th, if not sooner, that we will relay. But our hope is to see you all on April 18th at prom. Please know that if that isn't possible, Buffering will be rescheduling the event over the summer or in early fall, not canceling. As Buffy once said, you guys are going to have a prom. And in equally exciting news, next week on March 18th, our newest Angel on Pot episode will drop for our patrons at every level. We got a little distracted when we were trying to talk about Buffy Season 1, Episode 7, Angel last time. So again, this is part 2 as we consume some recreational legal weed and finish what we started.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching Blood Money. Stick around until the end for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Angel.
Blood Money was written by Mare Smith and Sean Ryan and directed by R.D. Price. It aired on January 23rd, 2001.
This is the one where Wolfram and Hart are sponsoring a fundraising benefit for a local teen shelter. Angel is suspicious of their motives and starts investigating. Meanwhile, Wes, Gunn, and Cordy work to establish their own detective business.
It's also the one where Angel and Anne Steele completely forget that they've met before.
Boy,
how's everyone doing with that pandemic? Woo! That whole intro, that's all I wanted to talk about.
The great thing is that even if we get quarantined, we can still put out Angel on Top.
This is so true. We are neighbors. You know, we are not exposing any of you, dear listeners, through the airwaves. So this is a safe zone. No hand washing required.
Yeah. So if it gets that bad, We're going to continue.
I'm not saying that we're heroes of the everyday, but I mean, you be the judge.
Yeah. What if like we're the only podcast that continues and then we become the most popular podcast in all of the world?
Well, it's like how Netflix and other streaming services are seeing they're one of the only companies actually benefiting from this because sort
and
of
Purell.
Like, well, of course, and toilet paper. Yeah. Which, wow, people just really want to make sure. You know what? If everyone had a bidet, if everyone used a tushy, they wouldn't need all of that toilet paper, okay? You would just have your quarantine backup plan right there, ready for you to go.
Yeah, we've been actually prepared for this for quite some time.
But, you know, like Netflix and the other streaming services are seeing an uptick in their viewership because so many people around the world are, you know, stuck in their homes right now. That will basically be what happens. All the other podcasts, I guess, will get canceled. And then the people stuck at home listening will be like, all right, I guess I'm going to get into Angel.
Yeah. So this is obviously a benefit of us recording inside my home because all these losers that film in studios, they're not going into those studios.
Danger. No, but really, I'm terrified. And that piece that just came out in the Atlantic that says cancel everything has me shook. Yeah. So I hope that you're all okay and safe. Please do take care of yourselves.
And
stay
wash
clean.
Your hands.
Wash your hands. And it's not just to protect yourself from other people's germs. It's to protect other people from your germs. Because also, I learned that one of the most efficient ways for this virus to spread is through fecal residue.
Yeah,
sorry.
So try not to eat ass for like the next month. I know it's going to be really hard for myself included. But just try not to because this is everyone's safety on the line.
Anyway, blood money. I'm going to be fully honest, and I might have you take this out, but I'm going to be fully honest about the way I first experienced this episode. So I was doing my rewatch, and I had just watched the previous episode, and I had had an edible, and then I fell asleep, and then I woke up in the middle of this episode during one of the scenes with Anne, and I was reeling for about 9 solid minutes because I was like, how could they just recast Darla and think no one would notice?
So the episode opens with your classic misdirect of like, this is a really serious situation. Then turns out they're just playing a board game.
Do you know what it reminded me of?
Me and you playing Settlers of Catan?
Absolutely. That's what I put in my notes.
Same. Anyone who has played board games with Laura and I should just be prepared for intensity, betrayal.
Deeply hurt feelings that last for weeks. I feel like it's only playing with you and I at the same time, though. I don't think I'm universally problematic to play with. I just think
it's
that
the combination.
There's something about our chemistry that's great for podcasts, bad for board games.
Unless we are on the same side.
Oh, yeah.
When we
then
turn against
fucking
other
watch
people,
out whoever we're playing.
Yeah. When we turn against other people and combine our shared competitiveness, we're unstoppable.
I mean, our
kickball
teammates on kickball knew that.
Yeah, and that's why they probably didn't want us on the team anymore.
Yeah. Just why would you bunt every time? Just go for it. You know what I mean?
Especially when the bases are loaded, you idiot.
God. I'm right there with you. But anyway, Gunn and Wesley, they're getting out some of their, you know, bosses quit malaise by playing Risk, it appears, which is the more overtly violent version of Settlers of Catan. Cordelia is basically like, get out, nerds!
Yeah. Like, this is now the second time Angel Investigations has taken up space in her apartment.
Yeah, unnecessary. They're not in a quarantine.
No. And also, her hair continuity is just all over the map. Now this is like haircut up to her chin with some like intense golden highlights.
What was going on, Charisma?
If we do ever have her on, I need to be like season 2.
Oh, first question.
The hair, yeah.
Absolutely.
Before even like, how are you?
I'm not even self-conscious about that being a lame question to use her time with. Like, because I'm genuinely so curious.
Yes.
I feel like there was a lot of BTS drama and not the K-pop band. That's industry speak for behind the scenes.
And judging from their reactions to Gun saying the A word, this is kind of like where they stand. Cordelia's still mad. Gun is like, we need Angel, but go off. And Wes is like, we don't need him. We're starting our own agency. Like, Wes is basically just trying to prove that he's the new top when he's like the most bottomy of all.
And then, as if it isn't rude enough for them to be taking up space in her home, they then pull out the OG business cards and start insulting Cordelia's logo, which, I mean, yes, it does look like a lobster, not an angel, but still rude.
But then Cordelia has a vision, which Wesley and Gunn miss her fall because they're coming up with a new tagline.
We don't have the benefit of graceful Lorne holding out his coat behind her head.
I know.
Again, I know we shout out to Carmel so often, but shout out to Carmel for the amazing Three's Company video you made.
That was amazing.
Of the imagining of the
Lorne, Phantom Dennis, Cordelia
sitcom.
Yeah.
But also Phantom Dennis really failed her in this moment. No one had her back.
I think that they had an opportunity to include Phantom Dennis in this first scene, and they really dropped the ball there. But anyways, Cordelia has a vision of two heads that breathe fire, and she very melodramatically says as they run off, you shouldn't go alone. And they also just don't, like, it's not even a question of if she's going to go with them. It's really strange. Is it because she's, like, already in a robe and it's 7:30?
I don't know. I think it's possible that she thinks she would have something to offer. She can work that crossbow. We know this.
Yeah. I'm curious why they didn't have her come along. They just ran off by themselves.
And she mentioned that the vision showed that this creature was rising up in the sewers underneath a school for girls. That's not paid off. You want to know what else isn't paid off? What the demon looks like.
Yeah.
Looks like production was a little tight on their budget.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know what? I don't know if we can really build a multi-headed, fire-breathing, 10-foot demon right now. So here's what I'm thinking. You cheat it.
Yeah.
You're going to cheat it. You're going to have them look out of the tunnel, look up, describe what they're seeing, and then jump in, and we'll just see the fire. We can do fire. I can give you fire.
Yeah,
I can't
Dan
give you
the
that
gaffer,
chance.
He's got a blowtorch. We can just shoot a little fire. We got some hairspray. And
then here's what we do. Given that we don't have to actually build this thing, you go to town with what it looks like. You just let Gunn and Wesley's imagination soar. And that's what they did. Just a little movie magic.
Yeah, this side storyline was just so completely underdeveloped and
all it's meant to show is
we can
they're
do it
still
him.
Doing it.
Yeah.
You know, even this creature that's so intimidating that we can't even afford to build it, we can take on.
Can I just go out on a limb here and say that I just didn't really like this episode?
Wow, you're coming in hot like a fire-breathing demon we never see. You're coming in hot like Dan's blowtorch.
This, again, kind of reminds me of in season 2 of Buffy when, like, the crazy storyline with Angelus is going on and then they throw in, like, Bad Eggs and Ted. It's like this.
Wow, you think this is Bad Eggs and Ted level?
Yeah.
Woof.
This feels so misplaced. It feels so underwhelming given what we've just seen. There's, like, not even a mention of Darla or Drusilla.
Yeah, that's true. I think it might serve to further show what Angel's new kind of code of ethics is outside of Angel Investigations and outside of Darla, and to kind of like play with that and play with who has integrity and who doesn't. And then, of course, at the end, it gets us to the greater goal that Wolferman Hart has for Angel. But no, I respect your feelings on that. And I think it's really hard to follow that incredible like trio of episodes we just had.
Yeah.
You can't, I think anything that came after Darla and Drusilla killing spree episodes is not going to feel satisfying.
Yeah.
And that's why I was so confused waking up and being like, who is this bizarro Darla?
Bizarla.
But you know what? is still going to be good, even if the episode is not this episode of Angel on Top.
Oh, yes.
By the way, you haven't even called out that I'm wearing our Angel on Top shirt.
You are wearing our Angel on Top shirt.
Thank you.
We still need to take matching photos in the shirts that Riz made us.
Riz made us incredible custom-made Angel Investigations shirts.
They're incredible.
So look for that on our social media content.
We are so active on socials.
Gonna be more active the more quarantined we get.
True. That is, I think that our audience is gonna benefit greatly from. Yeah.
Here I am in this room. Here's my dogs again. Yeah. Here I am in this shirt.
So now Angel is walking down the street because apparently nobody on the sidewalk knows how to move when more than three people are on it. And Angel runs into a familiar face. Yes, we know. If you watched Buffy, we've actually seen this woman twice before.
We've seen her twice in two very different capacities. We've basically seen her take on two different personas already.
Yes. The first is Chanterelle from the episode Lie to Me, just to refresh your memes. It's where one of Buffy's friends from home, Ford, moves to Sunnydale and she finds out that he's kind of a part of this like vampire worshiping club and he is trying to get turned, blah, blah, blah. And Chanterelle is one of the
groupies.
Vamp fanatics,
yeah.
Essentially. And so she actually has met Spike and Drew before.
Yeah, because they almost killed her.
Yeah.
And she met Angel that episode.
Yeah. So Mare Smith, who is one of the writers of this episode, she said that this was a conscious decision as she, quote, has trouble remembering people she met 3 days ago, let alone 3 years ago.
Okay, that doesn't sound like an excuse for a conscious decision. That sounds like an excuse for the fans got upset about this oversight.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to be like, what can I say? Good problem to have if you have fans like that. I can't remember people I just met 2 days. You know what I mean?
To be fair, she does look like every other damsel in distress that Angel has tried to help. But anyhow, we've also met Anne in season 3, episode 1 of Buffy. The first episode where Buffy is in downtown LA and she gets like mixed up in this fucking crazy thing where this guy is kind of like a cult leader and he's like draining the life out of young people that live on the streets or are in like the low income area of downtown Los Angeles. And Buffy saves Chanterelle, and because Buffy's middle name is Anne and that was her name tag that she had when she was serving at the diner, she gives it to Anne because Anne asks it, because Chanterelle asks if she could be Anne.
So and then Buffy,
Angel doesn't even know all these parallels.
No, and Buffy sets Anne up with an apartment and a job before she leaves LA.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, Buffy is responsible for the teen center thriving.
The degrees of separation is kind of like the lesbian community, and Angel would be like, oh, you already know my one ex. You already know my other ex as well. And you know, like, this guy that I, like, likely had, you know, threesomes, foursomes with.
You know all my exes.
Yeah.
All my exes have either tried to kill you or save you.
Whoa. And isn't that the lesbian community?
That is just real.
But she's looking good. She's working at the East Hill Teen Center. She's collecting food and clothes for runaways.
Although her wording choice when she's referring to the clothes donations she's about to bring to the teen center, and she says, yeah, there's always a feeding frenzy when a new batch comes in. Strange thing to say about your vulnerable youth, but okay, Anne.
But this interaction between Anne and Angel is going on for like far too long for what it is. Like, if I just bumped into someone on the street, I would just apologize.
If you bumped into someone on the street, you would apologize to them. You'd apologize to the box, and then you'd apologize to the sidewalk. You'd say, are you mad at me? They'd say no, and then you'd move on.
Hey, I'm a new me now. I'm a no apologies gal.
I love that for you in 2020.
But it's clear that either they're, like, both lonely because they're stretching out this interaction that should not be going on for too long, or someone has ulterior motives.
Dun, dun. And you want to know how we know he do? Is he gets home, and like a serial killer, he's got photos all over his place of Anne, and he's got a photo of her with Lindsay.
Detective Angel.
And at first, I was like, first of all, how did you get these pictures? Because they're all taken in daylight. But then we later learn that Merle took them. And that's what Angel employed Merle to do.
And then we get to the opening credits, which feels like we've already seen an hour of this episode before this opening credit. But all right. And then, of course, we get the scene of, you know, the saving money scene. Okay, we get it. Wesley and Gunn take down this. You wouldn't believe it had to be there to believe it. Ugh. Demon. I do like them as a duo, though. I like when they get along.
Yes, I agree. But Angel tracks down Merle, and Angel is just being bad cop.
Poor Merle.
Did you notice in the background of Merle's, I guess, could we say studio apartment?
Garden studio.
Yeah. The big Macintosh computer with like the translucent blue.
I did not see that.
I just pictured Merle as like a Carrie Bradshaw typing on his computer during the day. Like, as I was hanging upside down about to drown, I couldn't help but wonder, was I selling out the other demons or was I selling out myself?
I love that. I also weirdly picture him as a brony.
Brony?
That is My Little Pony Bros.
Where did you get this?
Did you never see there's an entire documentary about bronies? It's incredibly moving. I think and I slash hope that we have brony overlap in our listenership. I love bronies.
Wait, but why do you believe he's a brony?
I don't know. There's something about him that's kind of like sweet and soft. Like, I feel like he has gotten the short end of the stick. 100%. And no, he's not going to be my fuckwatch pick, despite what this sounds like. But he might be yours. We'll see. But yeah, I, you know, he was just here this episode as like comedic relief of this guy's getting his ass beat again by three different parties who all know where he lives. And I'm not about that life. I want better for Merle.
But what made you think he's a brony? Because he's soft?
I guess like I was thinking of what else he could be watching on that computer. And maybe this is before the days of watching content on your old Mac. So maybe I have my timing off. But I'm just picturing that he's, you know, watching his personal collection of My Little Pony. I also think this was before that show even came out, but just suspend disbelief, okay?
Okay, suspending. So Merle has some info on Anne. He mentions that she changed her name a couple of times, but no record, which is obviously information that we know. But he also has info that Wolfram and Hart stepped in to help her keep the lease on the shelter that she runs. Merle also says, what happened to that hot chick that works for you? Which I presume he's talking about Cordelia.
Yeah, I thought that's what he meant. And Angel's just a straight up bully now.
Yeah, when he shames him for his beanbags.
Yeah, but even before that, it's like, why, if he keeps wanting things from Merle, why is he treating him so badly? Like, this seems to be an ongoing relationship. Like, presumably Merle took those photos for him after the hanging upside down thing.
Yeah, some people just, I don't think, are meant to be managers.
He is toxic, Merle. Get out of there, baby.
Yeah.
You don't need this.
HR. So now we're at the East Hill Teen Center. Angel shows up with some stuff to donate, what Angel believes is appropriate to donate to a teen center.
But whose clothes were those? Were they Darla's? They were some dainty items. And all that said about it is Anne asks if they belong to an ex-girlfriend, and he says, oh, God, no. So yeah. Was it? I think it could be Cordelia, Faith, or Darla, but I feel like with Darla, he wouldn't have said God no about the ex-girlfriend thing.
Yeah, but I also couldn't have seen any three of them wearing what was pulled out.
Maybe it was that actress.
Or maybe it was that the chick with telekinesis. No, I wouldn't have seen. She's more like neutral tones. I couldn't see anyone really wearing what was pulled out. Would love to hear some theories.
Yeah, same. She gives him a tour, which includes bringing him into her office for some reason. And we get a scene that's not nearly as good as the episode of Fleabag where the priest brings Fleabag into his office. But we do establish that there's a bed there. She sleeps there some nights, Anne does. And that the shelter completely runs on donations. And Angel thinks he's being all sneaky, being like, oh, yeah, like, oh, completely on donations? And then she just immediately comes out with, yeah, actually, our biggest donor is Wolfram and Hart. They're guardian angels. Like, just, you know.
Did you like their address?
Yeah, like, you know, I feel like this is a moment where he might realize, okay, she is an innocent party in this. Like, mm-hmm. She sincerely, you know, thinks she's in bed with, so to speak, a good company.
Yeah. So she says that it was their idea for the big charity. They're donating everything for this like big charity ball and giving them a portion of the profits. But we know that it's likely a front.
And I'm with you on one aspect of this episode. It does feel like there's so like many things that they have to explain in this episode, like coming up with the whole conceit of the gala, which is like TV stars rob the guests of their donations, Wild Wild West theme. I felt like it was all like my showrunner uses this phrase, it's a long walk for a bologna sandwich. When like in a script where it just feels like so much effort is put in to like get us just this one thing that ultimately doesn't matter that much to the story.
Yeah.
Like, and they really leaned in, you know, once we get to the gala scene of these like celebrities of the moment acting like robbers. I don't know.
It also just, it really didn't make a ton of sense to me as to why this is Wolfram and Hart's biggest, like why they need this much money.
They are loaded.
Yeah.
They literally are fueled by all of these, like, my impression is that they have, you know, I imagine almost like a Jeffrey Epstein level, like black market network of millionaires and billionaires who are evil, who are supporting their efforts. So why do they need to steal from a charity? I felt like it was actually maybe more that they were trying to help their image. But if they just had a bunch of their employees slaughtered, couldn't they just turn that into an image building thing of like get pity attention? I don't know. I'm with you, though.
Yeah.
Just a little bit unnecessarily messy.
Yes. Well, poor Merle is in troubled waters again. This blue-faced guy who we later learn is named Boone questions what Merle does for Angel.
Boone's kind of hot.
Okay.
Like really strong jawline. Great, you know, honor, integrity.
True. I did appreciate that. Like he doesn't care. I mean, obviously later we learn like he doesn't really care about money. He doesn't really care about like allegiance to a certain party. Like all he cares about is knowing if he's good.
Boone, 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 Boone. I want you in my room. You know what I mean?
But this Boone fella is most interested when Merle mentions the Wolfram and Hart lawyers. And now, like a scene out of Scream, Lila gets into her car, checks the rearview mirror. Nobody's there. But then turns out Angel's in her back seat.
Okay. This moment, literally how? This is this episode's equivalent of Angel busting through the 20th floor window of Wolfram and Hart a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
Like, because we literally see her go up, unlock, track her getting in. And also at the very end of the scene, he kind of like slams back and disappears, almost like he just vanished without having to use a physical corporeal body.
Yeah, he doesn't have to open the door. He also, this guy's got some broad shoulders. You think she wouldn't see him when walking up to her car? Suspending.
But what happens in the car is, I guess you can say there's two layers of what's going on. The first layer is Angel basically negging her and just being like, I'm not playing by anyone's rules now. This is going to be so fun to watch you suffer, essentially. The other layer is sexually charged.
Yeah.
This is an intense, you know, and I feel like Lindsay has hinted at before. I don't know. I feel like there have been moments before of it seeming like Lila might have not as strong of a pull toward Angel as Lindsay has for Darla, obviously, but she has something there for him.
Well, I think that she likes to like use her sexuality in a way to get something that she wants, which I also feel like is something that like Angelus also has kind of like a sexual
definitely and
vibe.
I think he's doing that more than she is in this scene.
Yes, I agree. I think she's more scared.
Yeah, I don't think that she's putting that out there here.
No.
I think that he is very like the begging that comes later. Oh, Angel?
Yeah. I wish that they named him something else so that, because he's not Angel, he's not Angelus. What is he?
Maybe that's for us to decide. Is this Angle?
I think this is Angle.
Finally! Angle, there you are.
And now Lindsay and Lila are talking about this.
And basically this scene is Lila being a coronavirus alarmist and Lindsay being like Trumpian, like, I'm not worried, fake news, you know, like, if this kills some people, so what? We kill people every day, you know?
Yeah. But Lila is getting at the truth, which is that he's not playing by the old rules anymore. Whereas, yeah, Lindsay is in denial, saying he doesn't kill humans. But I think that's going to change, honey.
Then they're interrupted by Boone, who's just like, huh, you might be interested in a grudge I have. It's a grudge with a fella named Engel.
Haven't seen him since Juarez in the 20s. We had a disagreement over a senorita. We fought for 3.5 hours.
And then the sun came up and I let him go. You let him go? Why would you ever let him go, Boone? Oh, do you people know anything about honor? It would have been too easy.
Yeah, I think that I know who your fuckwatch pick is.
Keep thinking what you think you think.
Oh, I will continue to think exactly what I think. But we learn more about the larger plan, which has just been kind of vaguely gestured towards for the last season. Lila reminds Lindsay that the senior partners want Angel alive. So in good conscience, they can't encourage Boone to kill Angel. But Lindsay's like, I don't care. I want Angel dead because obviously he has more of animosity towards Angel, one, because of his hand, but two, because of Darla. And so he wants to bring Boone on board.
Also in the scene, Lila calls Lindsay Napoleon, which I think was a short joke / overcompensation joke. So Wes and Gunn are back from the quote unquote battlefield. I'll believe it when I see it, telling Cordelia about how they took down this insane demon and like, you did it. No, bro, we did it. And I think this is just to establish that they have increasing confidence in pulling this off without the help of Angel. And Cordelia confesses that she started looking for a new office for their agency and they're all down. And then, of course, they all have like a different opinion about what it should be named. They each want it named after themselves. Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, like without Angel, who was like the clear leader, now they're all having this kind of crisis of who is the leader now. And I think Wes more than anything believes that he's the leader. Whereas honestly, I feel like Gunn would be the leader.
I feel like Cordelia is the leader.
Wow.
She's providing the most raw materials.
True. They couldn't exist without her.
She both has the visions, which is how they even know what they're ever doing. And she's providing, at least so far, the space for them. So that's the boss, if you ask me.
That makes sense. And then Angel is creepily staring at pictures of Anne again for no particular purpose. And then Lila tracks down Merle. He is having a bad day, but reveals to Lila that the person that Angel had him track was Anne. So now Lila and Lindsay are aware of the fact that Angel knows about this charity ball situation.
And then Anne is alone in the dark at work. And Engel is really resorting to season one of Buffy behaviors. Like, he's really just leaning into I'm a creepy stalker vibe. Like, he saves enough women in his lifetime to know that, like, maybe if you're trying to make friends and be trusted by a woman,
turn on a light.
Yeah, and maybe don't just, like, show up in her place of work after hours in the dark like a creep. You know what? Especially not to do once you get there. Don't be like, yeah, actually, I'm stalking you. Here's the photos I took of you. I've been tracking your every move. Also, I know where you're going to get your money. And you got to trust me, though. No, bro. No, this is not. I mean, certainly not how we would function in 2020, but not even how you would function in 2001.
Certainly not. But it is hard to tell in this moment if he has ulterior motives or if he is being more saintly and is telling and, you know, the full truth of the situation, saying these people are going to use your charity. Do you really want that? It could ruin everything that you've built. Then Lindsay shows up, also trying to be all savior guy. And then Boone shows up. And if I were Anne, I would be like, get the fuck out of my small little rec room that you're definitely not going to pay for to repair because Boone and Angel are like throwing themselves across the tables and vending machines and shit.
And Boone tries to take on Angel and he's kind of kicking his ass.
Yeah, he's got like metal fists.
Yeah, what are those things? They're like metal like cords.
It kind of looks like, you know when you're installing a bidet?
Oh, I sure do.
And the cord that goes from the water line into the toilet kind of looks like that just wrapped around his fist.
That is powerful. Honestly, we need to try to get sponsored by Tushy.
Yes, which brings us to our sponsor for the episode.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So when Lindsay shows up to be like, don't worry, Anne, we saved you, we can kind of see in Anne's face that Anne knows what's going on. And Lindsay is really depending on the reveal of Angel's identity as a vampire to scare Anne.
A little does he know.
Yeah, that she used to be horny for vamps.
Yeah, when Lindsay's like, in a very mansplainy, patronizing way, is like, well, I don't know how to tell you this. There's a whole other world out there. She's like, bitch, I know this.
Yeah. I used to be in that world. And he's like, are you going to trust a mentally unstable vampire or a rich lawyer like me? And it just feels very easy. Like, I'm going to trust the mentally unstable vampire.
Yeah, when you put it that way, I'm going to go with the other guy. I'm going to go with the guy who's literally stalking me over you.
Yeah. And Lila and Lindsay are starting to freak out about Angel knowing what's going on. Like, they reveal obviously to the audience that they're stealing money from this charity event.
And there's all this talk of Angel says he has proof. Angel told Anne that he has proof. What could this proof be? Have we talked about it in public before?
You know, like, we're talking about it right now.
And if Lila's nerves are seeping into Lindsay's psyche now.
And Anne is back in her office. Angel shows up again. And Anne's not afraid of him. And Angel's like, so what did Lindsay say about me?
And she basically says, Yeah, I don't care that you're a vampire. I used to be turned on by them until I met one. The thing is, I've seen way worse. I have seen a 14-year-old sitting in her own blood after a rough trick and plenty of people walking on by.
Basically, Anne doesn't really give a shit about anything except for helping kids within her shelter. And
she's basically like, Shania Twain, that don't impress me much. What else you got? All I care about is getting money for these kids.
Yeah, so it is kind of like this moral conundrum that she's up against. Angel is like, these people that are putting on this charity that are going to take 95% of the profits, they are probably going to do horrible things, potentially that will harm people that you care about. Yet if you get 100K, are you still going to do this? Are you still going to let them use you so that you could get what you want? And it is kind of this tough bystander thing where it's like, if you're going to get what you want to help directly help people that you care about, does it matter to you what's going to happen to the larger world? Like, if you were Anne, what would you do?
Are you asking me that?
Yeah, I'm asking you, Laura.
I mean, that's a really hard call. I think that's what a lot of people who work in like nonprofit sector have to deal with every day, like, or philanthropy, when like, you know that, unfortunately, I would say more than half the time, if you traced back the source of the money, it's probably at some point going to have, you know, if not literal blood on it, like some figurative ethical question mark of how it came to be. So I don't know. I think I feel Anne's, you know, intent of like, yes, that is the history of these funds, but now I can channel them in a good way. So at least like we can turn an evil into a good, maybe. I see where she's coming from, basically.
Totally. Yeah. Because there's also probably not many other moments or opportunities she'll get to like reap in 100K in one night for this charity.
And one question I have about this scene is Angel holds out a tape and is like, here's the proof. I'm going to play it at the gala. You just have to get me in. And she says no, but she also doesn't ask to see the tape, which obviously is convenient story-wise because the tape turns out to be a fake-out tape.
Right.
But she's not curious, like, all right, let's see how bad it is. Or is it just sort of like, I don't even want to know, because if I'm going to stick to this justification, I can't be forced to see what these
and
people
also,
have done.
And I also, again, not to like poke more holes in the story, but I also feel like the people attending this gala don't really give a shit where this money's going. They just want to mingle with the stars.
No, absolutely not.
So now we're at this gala.
And the Dixie Chicks' Let Her Rip is playing, which is the best part about the gala.
Yeah. But there's also this little like posthumous video of Holland helping someone who is certainly not a teen.
Yeah, that was definitely someone on the crew.
Yeah. And we get to meet Nathan Reed, who is one of the higher ups at Wolfram and Hart. Lila introduces him to Anne.
He loves to blow smoke. Just right up your tush.
They have upped security at this gala specifically for the prevention of Angel. And there's this demon named Zorn.
Who's just floating head in the background. Like, what's up? I'm Zorn.
Yeah. And he will know if there is a vampire in sight. And he's like wearing this black hood. And so basically the conceit of this charity ball is that there are celebrity bandits of four likely daytime soap opera stars with fake guns holding people at gunpoint to give them money. And there's no way a charity event like this would be held in 2020.
No,
like,
nothing
just all
with guns.
Willy-nilly. Yeah. I can't remember if it was Lila that said that there was something kind of like prostitute-esque about it, because I feel like the people coming here that have a lot of money, they're like getting off on the fact that these young hot people are like, give me your money. Like, I think they came here for this like purpose that feels somewhat sexual.
Well, yeah, I feel like that's always why people try to get celebrities for their fundraisers.
Yeah,
because that's actually what the draw is, not the giving part.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that moment that feels like a shout out to the Willow storyline and Buffy. Yeah. Yeah. Where there is a woman putting her diamond necklace into the bag and saying to the female actress, this thing with making your character gay, is this like about ratings? Because I don't get it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Joss and Allison probably got earfuls 100%. About Willow, especially in this era.
Yeah. So are you ready for your old pal?
Yes. Fuckwatch. So my fuckwatch pick is not Merle. It's not Boone.
Is it Serena?
Who's Serena?
The woman that was asked about the gay character.
No, but that, I'm actually surprised I didn't pick her.
Yeah, I'm surprised too now that I think about my own pick.
Dang. Maybe it's the gay for pay thing that immediately kind of made me not into it.
She might have been gay.
That's true. Well, I don't know. I don't mean to make assumptions about Serena. No, my pick was a much subtler presence in this episode. You may have even missed her. She did have a line, but it was very quick, but her comedic timing was excellent. Also, she's a reader. She's so much a reader that she just goes out into LA and sits at tables and just reads novels. And sometimes while she's reading novels, these two bickering lawyers walk past her and really interrupt her literary flow. And this is the woman who was reading behind Lila and Lindsay when they are talking about what proof Angel could have and fighting about who's at fault. And one of them, I forget, Lila or Lindsay says, "We never talked about stealing the money in public." And then the lady reading a book nearby pipes up and says, "Until now, LOL." I mean, this girl, she's funny and she reads. She's the girl for me.
But it's maybe clear she wasn't actually reading. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been able to hear this whole conversation.
Hey, it's not her fault if she is eavesdropping on a very public, interesting argument between two attractive lawyers.
Just saying, maybe she has trouble concentrating.
You know what? If I had thought about Serena earlier, I probably would have gone with Serena, but here we are.
That's fair. Yeah, we are truly just scraping at the bottom of the barrel now that we're just using incidental actors.
Hey, I'm excited about her and she's way better than a hairpiece. Okay, Brittany?
I mean, we're still talking about it.
It's true. And it will be one of the questions for Charisma. Should we interview her?
So my pick, it will come as no surprise. It's Merle.
No surprise at all.
He is down to earth. He's a sweetie. He's a people pleaser, and that obviously got him in trouble. And I think he just wants, you know, some peace and quiet. I thought it was quite charming that he had beanbags as chairs. And he also seems to be the only character just like not completely out of their mind this episode. He's calm, he's cool, collected, even under duress. And I like that. And he seems like a little bottom.
Definitely a bottom.
So we're still at this gala, and when we look up into the balcony and we believe we're looking at Zorn, it's actually Angle. Angle is in the building.
But do we think that the Zorn face that we saw earlier was a mask, or do we think that Angel disposed of Zorn?
I think that Boone and Angel disposed of Zorn.
Okay. And Lila is the MC of this event. There's just piles of cash coming in. The crowd hears a commotion, and it's Angle and Boone just going at it, fighting. They leap over the balcony into the audience, and there's this kind of runner through the scene of the actors making snarky actory comments, which I could have done without. It was fine.
Well, it was like, I'm going to kill my agent.
Or I'm not buying the makeup when they see Boone.
It gave them depth.
Lindsay gets Angel held down by security guards. He knew he was coming. And then he pats Angel down for the tape. Don't know how he knew there was a tape. But it's fine. Maybe Anne told him. And then Boone is like, he doesn't have it and stands side by side with Angel in a cute bro way.
Yeah.
Like, surprise, we're actually on the same side right now, at least.
But then Anne has a mission. She's walking towards this giant tower of 90s electronics that she knows where exactly to plug in this little tape. And she plugs it in to prove that this is all a scam. But then it turns out it's one of Cordelia's self-tapes. It's a commercial for milk.
Nothing will so solidly establish you in the era this was in than a milk commercial.
Yeah, because the big milk lobby was strong around this time. Big Dairy was really just taken over.
Both Sarah Michelle Gellar and David Boreanaz had their own Got Milk ads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then it's Wesley embarrassingly like trying out his kind of like angel-like persona.
Yeah, it felt like maybe a tape he was making for his girlfriend.
For Virginia, yeah. And turns out, it takes us a while to realize that this was intentional. Like, I thought that it was an accident.
Right, like Cordelia and Wesley had taped over some evidence or something.
Yeah. Turns out Angel didn't have proof. So the proof was that Lindsay and Lila getting so worked up about it is proof.
And then they stole the money just because? I think it's sort of, my interpretation was it's like, this is Angel not playing by any rules. This is Chaos Angel.
Yeah, I don't feel like it really proved anything. Like, Lindsay and Lila getting worked up about it, for me, it went from A to C. Like them being mad that someone is chaotically putting a video on this giant screen wouldn't, like, prove to everyone in the audience that $2 million are being used towards something else. Like, I don't think it proved that.
I thought maybe it was a sign that Angel might, on some deep level, miss his team a little bit.
Or is, like, it proof that Angel is kind of, like, edging them? Like, he's like...
Edging who?
Lila and Lindsay. Like, he's like, maybe I could have gotten proof, but I didn't. I wanted to just fuck with you.
I don't even need proof to ruin your day.
Yeah, like, is that what it was? I don't know. This episode just was not for me.
Anne is pissed. I think it's not for her either. She slaps Angel right across the face. And he's like, I just wanted to shake him up. The money was tainted. You didn't need that girl. And then he's like, that's the difference between us. You still care. Which is like the most obnoxious. I feel like I've heard that type of comment from so many like nihilistic dudes who are just like dark and stormy and like, fuck it all. Like, Angel is not my fave.
No.
I would rather him be Angelus, to be honest.
Yeah. At least there's like focus there.
And at least that Angelus is funny.
Yeah.
Angel is a bummer.
But yeah, so Anne is pissed, one, because she's not getting that money, but two, because Angel didn't even expose the scheme. She's the face of her charity, and her charity kind of looks shitty now, too, for no real reason. But Nathan, the higher up at Wolfram & Hart, is very much not pleased.
He's like, you better start piling up some W's real quick.
Yeah, because Lindsay went directly against their orders by hiring an assassin to kill Angel. And Lindsay is like, all right, fine. Now, after all these episodes, please directly state to the audience why we cannot kill Angel. Nathan says, Angel is a major player in the apocalypse, and the prophecies all agree. And the side that he's on is a gray area, so we're going to do everything in our power to make it less gray and turn him over to the dark side. And honestly, if he kills one of you, that's kind of better for us because it's proof that he's turning over to the dark side.
That was a pretty like baller move on his part.
Yeah, because he says you're both expendable. Like, I can find more attorneys who have a horrible moral compass. Like, they're everywhere.
Literally, it's their boss being like, this person who has made your life hell for the last indeterminate amount of time, and in one of your cases, you know, chopped off your hand. I'm kind of psyched if he kills you, to be honest. It's just a real lose-lose for them.
Yeah, because he's more important than you.
And then we see Angel looking at photos. It kind of makes it seem like he's really looking at Lindsay in the photo. And then Boone is behind him, and Boone has the money, 2.5 mil. And it becomes clear that essentially Boone had agreed to help Angel get this money. And that was the price for Angle being willing to fight to the death with Boone.
And it's surprising because before, Boone literally wiped the floor with him. Unless this was all a clever ploy. You know,
I don't
like,
think so. I think that was an earnest fight before. I think that was before they had gotten in cahoots.
But we didn't even get to see. Like, obviously, we know that Angel killed Boone because when he gives all the money to Anne, which was a good thing to do, there's blood on it. Also, kind of shocked that the blood wasn't blue, whatever. But we don't even get to see how he killed Boone.
No, it's another sort of like, that seems too expensive. And, you know, we don't have a stunt double who's quite that big.
Yeah, would love to see what the original draft of this episode was and how much production killed it.
Chopped off, yeah. Although, maybe it was a little bit for the sake of the audience, because I didn't want to see Boone die. You know?
Yeah.
Because also, that's even though Boone was literally asking for it and paying for it.
Because of what he was wearing?
No, Brittany. But, you know, even though he genuinely wanted to fight Angel, it does feel like a little, you know, another little notch in the Nathan column of Angel is killing someone who is, by demon standards, objectively good.
Yeah.
Maybe to, you know, who knows, in part, make up for what he just did to Boone. Angel brings that 2.5 mil directly to Anne, and it's like a little bit better than your 10%, and she's immediately like, I know how to launder this.
Yeah, this isn't the first time that she's washed blood out of money.
And then she literally asks, what's this? And he says, blood. And she says, it'll wash. Okay, Anne.
It's blood money, like the title of this episode, blood money. Maybe Anne was supposed to kind of be like a proxy for Angel in some regard, you know, like they do good things for people objectively, but sometimes they have to do bad things to help people. You know what I mean?
I do.
Sometimes you got to do bad things to do good things.
At least in this universe. Maybe ours as well. Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Laura Zack. You can find me on Instagram, just my name, at Laura Zack, or on Twitter at @la_wa.
And I'm Brittany Ashley, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brit27Ash.
You can also follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter at AngelOnTopCast, and you can email us at AngelOnTopPodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Congrats again to the winners of the Buffy Prom tickets. We will be in touch soon. And until next time, everyone take care of yourselves. Wash your hands. Don't go into big crowds if you can avoid it.
And please enjoy the poem for Blood Money from Angel's perspective. Or from Angle's perspective, really.
Blood Money. A social worker's trust is hard to come by, but I pulled it off, no look askance. In City of Angels, crossed paths are many. She believes this an encounter of chance. My old pastimes recaptured, stalking Anne for secrets yet untold. Is she demonic or just collusive? At this firm, only guilty are bankrolled. But she's a little too quick with intel to be a convincing mastermind. Helping street youth at whatever cost is how she's exclusively aligned. Parking garage visit to Lila for charged warnings and some negging. All that guides me now is chaos. I'll let her know she'll soon be begging. My favorite sort of woman is a blonde in a dark room. I warn her off false galas. Would have worked if not for Boone. Lindsay's underestimation of Anne's former vamp fixation. She's partial to my kind over his ilk of corporate slime. Despite hard edges, she couldn't help but try to expose corruption. My demonic team up with Boone caused more than one disruption. She's angry at my lies, nothing cold hard cash can't fix. Bills coated with righteous Boone's blood, a quick wash should do the trick.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.